Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 135 in this series entitled Golden Love and Silver Love, Love as an Answer, Love as a Question, Chapter 50. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5762.
As an introduction to the 50th chapter of Tanya, I think it is important to give an introduction not just to the theme of what the Alter Rebbe will discuss, but also to the methods of how we are supposed to relate to what he's going to discuss. Because at first glance, you will see that it seems quite remote and removed from our lives and our conditions. So I want to share with you something that I heard once. When I visited Toronto a few months ago, I met a Jew, and he told me a story that when he was a child, there was a very well-known, actually a legendary Chabad Chassid that came to visit the city, and he stayed at his home. His name was Reb Nissen Nemenov of blessed memory, who was a chassid of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, and then his son, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, from the legendary heroes and warriors in Russia to allow Yiddishkeit to survive and thrive under the most difficult of circumstances. And then he moved to Brinois, a suburb near Paris, where he led the yeshiva there, the Chabad yeshiva there, for many decades until his death, I think in 1984. So he visited this child's home, and the child had to give him his bed. There were no extra beds. He gave him his bed, and he slept in another bedroom on a mattress on the floor. Now, there was a rumor among Lubavitcher Chassidim that Reb Nissen Nemenov was a Beinoni of Tanya. Although he was a regular Jew, like you and I, he wasn't a Rebbe, wasn't a tzaddik, what we usually call a tzaddik, but rumor had it that his life was actually a personification of the model of the Beinoni that Alter Rebbe describes in Tanya, which is a Jew who is aware, who possesses both souls, the animal soul and the divine soul, who is aware of the identity of both souls, who experiences temptations and cravings from both souls, but never allows himself to succumb to the aspirations or urges of his animal external soul, and in his thought, speech, and action, he always remains loyal to his godly, transcendental, divine soul. That's the battle of the Beinoni. And there was even a rumor that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe once said on him that he's a Beinoni. I don't know if it's true or not true, if it's accurate, but that was the rumor. So this child, who was 9 years old, approached Reb Nissen Nemenov one morning, and he says, Reb Nissen, is it true that you're a Beinoni of Tanya? Which I guess an adult wouldn't do, but a 9-year-old child could do it. And he says, don't be humble on me. I want to know if it's true. So Reb Nissen turns to him and he says, why is it relevant to you to know about my life? What are you going to gain out of knowing about my personality and my life? So that was a good question. So the child responds, because if it's true, I just want to know, how is it possible? How is it possible that a regular human being who's tempted to gossip and to waste time and to do all types of other and negative things, or even utter negative words, or even entertain negative thoughts, how is it possible that such a human being who's inclined towards all these habits and tendencies should actually not fall prey to them ever? So Reb Nissen tells him, let me ask you a question. You have an evil inclination and an animal soul? He says, absolutely yes. Do you have a godly soul? He says, most probably yes. He said, but fine. Do you feel the urges and impulses of your animal soul very often? He says, yes, very often. I want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm lazy. I'm envious. I'm, you know, whatever the words he used. So Reb Nissen says, fine, but I have one question. For the next 60 seconds, could you be a Beinoni? Just for 60 seconds. He says, of course. And he says, and for the 60 seconds, when those 60 seconds are up, for the 60 seconds following that, can you be a Beinoni? He says, yeah. So he says, so that's a Beinoni. For a Beinoni, every 60 seconds, he's a Beinoni for the next 60 seconds. Which means that the Alter Rebbe is not addressing an absolute situation where you're a Beinoni for life, and that's it. It's about every 60 seconds. It's about being a Beinoni for a minute, about being a Beinoni for the next hour, about being a Beinoni just for today. And in that sense, he told me that he's now an adult. He told me it always stuck to him how suddenly something remote and irrelevant became realistic. Now, it's important to state this because although the Alter Rebbe doesn't say this in Tanya, we have to realize that the Alter Rebbe wrote the Tanya in somewhat of an extreme fashion. In other words, he created absolute models which then have to be applied to every individual life according to that individual's capacity and condition. If the Alter Rebbe would have not created complete absolute models, the book would have been applicable only to individuals. Since he wanted the book should be applicable to everybody, as he explains in the introduction of Tanya, if any of you recall, therefore what he had to do was, he created the model, the paradigm, the general structure which could then be employed by every individual according to where he or she stands at that particular moment. So it made the book much more applicable rather than less applicable. If he would have been given concrete examples to deal with particular situations and particular struggles in a very detailed fashion, it would have had the advantage that certain individuals would feel, ah, he's mamish addressing me, but it would necessarily exclude thousands or millions of others. And thus, every chapter, whatever he discusses, whether it's an animal soul, whether it's love to Hashem, whether it's ecstatic love, whether it's awe, whether it's depression and joy, he creates general models, but they're not general in the sense that they cannot be applied in details. They're models that lend themselves to be used, employed, seen, experienced in myriads and myriads ways, actually in myriads and myriads of ways, actually in infinite combinations. This is also true about all of the levels of love of Hashem that he addressed. And it's also important to remember this in connection with the theme of chapter 50. Apparently a subject that is a very, very high level, but Alter Rebbe addresses it in its complete model. But this model then can be used and applied to each one of us, wherever we stand in our own position, and can then be used in our own life and our own relationships and our own struggles. Now, from chapter 41 through chapter 49 till 50, the Alter Rebbe began to share with us what I think you can call a catalog of loves. He began presenting to us his own database of various types of loves and affections that the Jew is capable of experiencing towards Hashem. I use the word catalogs or database, but unlike most catalogs that are extremely objective and sometimes remote from the human condition, this is a catalog and a database which contains within it Alter Rebbe's own soul and experience, as is very obvious, it comes through in the chapters. Most of these loves, although not all of them, most of these loves in the catalog from 41 through 49, the Alter Rebbe claimed already exist in a latent or dormant way in the heart of every Jew. They just need to be activated, which means you have to pull on the strings in the heart to activate them. And there are various chords, multiple chords in the Jewish heart, which produce various experiences of love when each of these chords is activated. It's like the various chords or strings in a violin or a guitar, that different chords produce a different type of melody, and thus you can also appreciate the various levels of love that all are produced by different strings, by different chords within the multifaceted and multi-layered divine soul of the Jew. To give a general overview, in chapter 43, the Alter Rebbe discussed a love that he called Ava Rabba, or Ava B'Tanugim, an ecstatic love, an abundant love, an overwhelming love, which is actually a gift from above. It's that love in which you experience paradise while you're still in this world. You experience the next world in the present world. This is the love where the person becomes submerged in divine light and he's just in the condition of perpetual kvelling. He's ecstatically nullified in the presence of Hashem continuously, endlessly, and completely. Chapter 44, he went on to discuss a much lower level of love. And this is the feeling of the Jew that Hashem, you are my life. In the Alter Rebbe's words, Nafshi ivisicha, I crave you, I cherish you because you are my soul. It's where we come to understand and feel that Hashem and life are synonymous. My breath, my engine, my motor, my consciousness, my electricity, that is Hashem. It's not easy to realize that. But when you do realize that, godliness becomes as precious as life, because godliness is life. That is my life. So the Alter Rebbe says the implications of this awareness and feeling is that the Jew won't only wake up in the morning to pray and learn and do mitzvahs, but in the middle of the night, he said, I'll jump out of bed and begin to learn Torah. Why? Because life cannot be delayed. You can't put off life. You can't say 7 in the morning, 6 in the morning, I'll go embrace my life. 6 in the morning, you embrace a luxury. You eat breakfast. But life, you can't wait for till the morning. When it's something that touches life, you don't follow protocol. You do anything to remain connected to life. So the Jew jumps out of bed in the middle of the night to connect to godliness. In the continuation of 44, he discussed a deeper love. Not Hashem, you are my life, but Hashem, you are my parent. You are my father. Which means you're not only as precious as life, but you're more precious than life. Because you are not only my life, you're the source of my life. This emotion evokes within the Jew the readiness not only to treat Hashem as precious as life, but to risk his life for Hashem, which is of another level and of another status. In chapter 45, he went on to discuss another love he called compassionate love. This is the love that is evoked as a consequence of the feeling of compassion and empathy that consists of the nature, that consists of the feeling, what am I doing to my inner sacred soul when I'm detached from godliness, when I'm detached from living a true moral spiritual life? When the Jew reflects on the tragedy, the abuse of what we in this world are capable of bringing to our soul, of bringing upon our soul, of afflicting our soul with, that feeling of real compassion, of sensitivity to the divine spark that is in you and travels with you wherever you go. And if you go into a garbage dump, it follows you into the vulgarity of that garbage dump. That compassionate feeling is also a prerequisite for another love. And then we hit chapter 46 through 49, which all discussed various elements of one type of love, which is called kamayim haponim leponim love, or you can call it reflective love or reciprocal love. The Alter Rebbe said that hearts respond to each other like a mirror. If a heart loves another heart, the second heart loves the first heart in return. This is such a deep reality, the Alter Rebbe said, that even if somebody loves you and you're unaware of the fact that they love you, the very fact that they love you will create within you a reciprocal love towards them instinctively. Certainly, if they express that love towards you, you will respond in love in an even a more intensified way. Certainly, if that love is undeserving, particularly if that person is totally of another world and another domain, the very fact that this person loves you and loves you so deeply will instinctively create a responsive love, a reflective love within you towards him. So when the Jew meditates upon the profound love that Hashem showed and continues to show to him, to the extent, as the Alter Rebbe explained in 48, 49, that Hashem puts aside his endlessness, he forgoes his innate state, which is endless and infinite and absolute and all-pervading, in order that we should be created as finite, fallible, egotistical human beings, because he wants a relationship with us. And for the sake of that relationship, he's ready to forego himself, which is endless, so that we should emerge. There is an instinctive reflex of love from the Jew towards Hashem. Now we will be able to appreciate chapter 50. Let's look inside. It's on the bottom of page 139. Or Daf Ayin Amid Aleph. Zogdar Alter Rebbe, Vihine, Kol Pchinus Madreges Ava Haniskaris La'el, Hein Mesitra Diyamina. All the forms and levels of love mentioned above, beginning with 43 through 49, derive from the right side, from the right element, which we will soon see what the Alter Rebbe means with that. Upchinis Kayin, they are all connected to the level of the Kayin, of the priest, because Ish Chesed, for the Kayin, is defined as a man of kindness, as a man of Chesed, meaning that the personality and the spiritual service of a Kayin, according to the teachings of Kabbalah and Chassidus, come under the category of chesed, of attraction, of love. V'nikrayos, and all of these levels of love that are identified with the right side and fall under the category of the service of a kayin, you can be defined as a kayin when you experience these loves. All of these loves are also called kesef hakadoshim. They are called kesef hakadoshim, which literally means the money or the silver for holy things. The Alter Rebbe is paraphrasing here a pasuk in Kings 2, in Malachim Beis, chapter 12, pasuk He, Perikid Beis, pasuk He, where the Judean king Yehoyash, Melech Yehoyash, turns to the Kohanim, and he tells them that Kol Kesef HaKadoshim Asher Yuvah Beis Hashem, all of the money for the sake of the holy things of the temple that will be brought to the house of Hashem, yikhu lahem ha-kayanim, the kayanim should take this money and they should use it for bedek habayis, to renovate the Beis HaMikdash, to renovate the temple in Yerushalayim. Thus, the king Yehoyash entrusts this money or this silver to the kayanim. So the Alter Rebbe says, spiritually, this also has a deeper meaning, because kesef literally means money, or in a broader sense, or it means silver. Kesef is silver. In a broader sense, we call kesef money. But spiritually, kesef can also be translated as craving, as longing. Miloshein, kesef comes from the term, or from the phrase, nichsef nichsafta lebeis avicha. You have greatly longed for your father's home. And here by divine providence, we all know he's quoting a pasuk in this week's parsha, Parsha's Vayetze, where when Yaakov Avinu and his family escape from his deceitful father-in-law Lavan, Lavan pursues him and he tells Yaakov Va'ata holoi chalachta, now you have left, ki nichsoif nichsafta lebeis avicha, because you longed greatly for the home of your father, but lama ganafta salakai, why did you have to steal my gods in the process? You long for your father, but why do you have to steal my gods? So kesef not only means silver or money, but it also denotes a longing, a yearning, a craving. So kesef hakadoshim, the Alter Rebbe explains, is a longing for kadoshim, a longing for holiness. So Yahayash tells the Kayanim, when people will present to you their kesef hakadoshim, their longing for holiness, you the Kayanim will take it. You the Kayanim will embrace it. Because this is the love that is associated with Kayanim who represent chesed. Now the fact that Kayanim represent chesed, I know we have at least one Kayan in the house, I don't know if there are more. That's the divine providence of the connection that you deserve the mazel tov today. So it's actually a theme in the Kabbalah and in Chassidus. It's based on the Pasuk in Parshas V'zayis HaBracha. In Moshe's final blessings to the Shvatim, to the tribes, he talks to the tribe of Levi and he says, Ula Levi Amar, Tumecha v'urecha li'ish chasidecha. Concerning the Levite tribe, he turns to Hashem and he says, your Tumim and your Urim, which is the breastplate that the high priest, the Kayan Gadol, wore, this you have given li'ish chasidecha, to your devout man, which is the Kayan Gadol. In other words, the Kayan is defined by Moshe as ish chasidecha, and the Zohar explains in various places, in Parshas Nasi and other places, that Kayin personifies his personality and his spiritual service personifies chesed. That's why we also say in Tehillim and Ashrei every day, V'chasidecha yivarchucha. Your chasidim will bless. So this refers homiletically also to the Birchas Kayin and to the blessings of the priests that were entrusted to them. They were entrusted with the mission to bless the Jewish people because they are in the level of chesed. In any case, these loves are therefore connected to the Kayan. And this love is defined as kesef. It's the desire, the craving, the yearning of the Jew to become joined and become connected with Hashem. This includes all of the loves from 43 through 49. Ach yesh oid b'chinas av ha'ilal kolon. But the catalog doesn't end. There is one more level of love. There is another level of love which excels all of the aforementioned levels. Kemailas hazav ala kesef. As gold is superior to silver. These loves truly represent kesef, silver, which also means yearning, craving. Nichsev nichsav to lebeis avich. But then there is the love that is personified, reflected in gold, which is superior to silver. Gold, we know, is simply more valuable and it's worth more than silver. Even practically, I think today, for example, you can sometimes purchase an ounce of silver for something like $5.75, and the same ounce of gold will cost you some $300. But this is a quantitative difference. That gold is more precious, it's more expensive, it's more valuable, in which case a preponderance of silver would be more valuable. If you would have a great, great quantity of silver, it could be more valuable than gold. But Alter Rebbe is referring here also not to a quantitative difference, as it becomes obvious soon, he's referring to a qualitative difference. Even if you have a huge amount of silver and a very minute amount of gold, in which case you would have to pay more for the silver, there is a certain gleam, a certain glee that exists in gold which makes it highly attractive. Gold just has a particular glow, a splendor, an aristocracy, a luster, a majesty to it that doesn't exist in silver. Silver has its own advantages. There's certainly a fineness to silver and a deep royalty to silver. But there is a brilliant brightness and luster that exists in gold that does not exist in silver. Parenthetically, there's an interesting marsha. The Gemara in Masechta Yuma Daf Mem Daled Amud Beis says that there are shiva zahavim. There are seven types of gold. The Gemara enumerates seven types of gold. The Zohar in Parsha Struma explains this Gemara also at length and says that's why in Parsha Struma, when Hashem tells the Jewish people to build a tabernacle and to donate various materials for building of the Mishkan, the first thing he mentions is Zahav, gold, and then comes silver and copper and so forth, because gold is the most precious. And the Zohar says that there are seven levels in gold, which the Gemara also goes through. It's interesting, seven levels of gold, ordinary gold and Zahav, Toiv, good gold and Zahav, Mufaz, Zahav, Adam, various levels. The Zohar says that they correspond to the seven levels of Gevura within the seven emotions, which will become clear in Tanya. And the first and highest level is associated with Bina, which we'll also see soon in Tanya. But in any case, the Marshan, Masichta Yuma, brings out a fabulous point. He says that the numerology of Zav, Zav consists of three letters. Zion, Hey, Vez. Zion is seven, Hey is five, and Vez is two. So what does that give us? 14. Kesef is Chaf Samach Fei. Chaf is 20, Samach is 60, Fei is 80. So that makes 140. 80 plus, 80 plus 160, I'm sorry. Kesef is 160 and Zav is 14. Now the Marsha says like this, Tosfos and Baba Metzia, Daf Mem Dalet, Perek HaZav, which we're soon going to discuss because it's relevant to Tanya, speaks about the value of gold relative to silver. So Tosfos says that gold is worth 12 times the amount of silver. Generally speaking, Tosfos says in my times, you can't find it should be more. It's 12 times. Could be less, but maximum is 12 times, which means if you buy 1 ounce of silver, you'll pay for it a certain amount. And for the same ounce in gold, you have to pay 12 times that amount. So says the Marshal like this. If I buy 12 ounces, if I buy 12 ounces of silver for $160, so if I want to buy 1/12 of that in gold, I'll have to pay the same amount. How much would 1/12 of that be? 14. So that's why Zav is 14 and Kesef is 160, because 1/12 of silver, I have to pay for gold the same amount if I would buy 1/12 of silver. And it's not mamish 14 actually, it's somewhere in between 13 and 14. It's somewhere in between 13 and 14, but a 12th of 160 is approximately the number 14. The Marsha also explains that from the various metals that exist in the crust of the earth, gold is affected primarily by the sun, and silver is affected primarily by the moon. And since the cycle of the sun is 365 days, which is 12 times the amount of the cycle of the moon, which is 30 days, the cycle of the moon completes 30 days, therefore, financially and economically, Tosfos says that the price for gold is 12 times the amount of silver. I mention this not just because it's an interesting Marsha, because the Marsha gives us already a taste of how economics and the numerology and physics parallel each other. And here, and through this chapter of Tanya, we'll also be able to put into the equation mysticism and spirituality and psychology and a person's personal service to Hashem, how it all becomes one. So in any case, the Alter Rebbe says, is it? Gold is a superior conductor to silver. So you mean it?
12 times more.
Not 12 times more. So you mean it has more resistance? Less resistance. It melts away easier. Okay. I thank you for that, because the Alter Rebbe says that in spiritual terms. We'll see that in a moment. So let's go on. So we're now going to address in chapter 50 a different love, which is the golden type of love. Instead of the silver love, we have the golden love. What is this? Zagdal Terebbe Vihi Ava Kiddush Peyesh. This is a love that can be compared to glowing coals of fire. And in that sense, it is also similar to gold, because the color or the yellowness of gold reflects more fire, in contrast to silver, which is more white and reflects more the color of water, if you could use the term color, in reference to water, because all of the other loves, the silver-like loves indeed are defined as water loves, water-like loves, ava kamayim, versus the golden love, the Alter Rebbe will explain, is defined as ava ka'esh, a fiery love, which indeed Alter Rebbe had already addressed this type of love at the end of 44, but there he said we're going to explain it later, and the later is here in chapter 50. Now, the Alter Rebbe in the beginning of this chapter said that the first loves are connected with Sitra de Yamina, the right side. So now he says, this love, the love like glowing coals of fire, is Mebchinas Gvuras al Yainas de Bine La. It's derived from the level of higher Gvuras of the higher Bina. This love stems from the higher attribute of rejection of strength that exists within the higher attribute of Bina, of comprehension. So the source of this love is from the level of Gevura within Bina. We all know by now that in Kabbalah and Chassidus, when the structure of the spheres of the 10 divine emanations is created, there are two ways in which the spheres are constructed. Either in which each sphere, each emanation and quality is distinct and independent from its neighbor, or another structure in which they are formulated and configured in groups of three. There are the spheres that are right-oriented, are oriented towards the right side. There are the left-oriented spheres, and there are the center-oriented spheres. Chachma, Chesed, Netzach are on the right. Bina, Gvura, Hoid are on the left. Das, Tiferes, Malchus are in the middle. So you have conception on the right, comprehension on the left, application in the center. I'm doing them in English. Attraction on the right, rejection on the left, compassion in the center. Competitiveness on the right, surrender on the left, and bonding in the center, and then Malchus, which is confidence, is detached from the other ones. It facilitates all the other ones. It expresses the other ones, but it doesn't become part of that connected tree. Generally, the right-oriented attributes and qualities embrace. The left-oriented ones reject. The right-oriented ones create a closeness. The left-oriented spheres create a distance, a remoteness. The right-oriented spheres enhance your identity, while the left-oriented spheres challenge your identity, generally speaking. So the first types of loves are connected with the right side, and therefore they're connected to chesed. And that's really why the Alter Rebbe quoted the pasuk Nichsef Nichsafta Lebeis Avicha. Why is it important to mention the words Lebeis Avicha, to the home of your father? Because your father is associated with Chachma. Chachma represents the father versus Bina, which represents the mother. However, our love, the present love, is associated not with Chachma, but with Gvura. And therefore, not only with Gvura, but also with Bina, which is not the father, but also the mother. But if you realize, Alter Rebbe says, it's the Gvura of Bina. Which means in Bina itself, there are two elements. Because you see, any love that is created must come from Bina. Because just as a child, emotions are like children. A child can't be born exclusively from a father. A child also needs a mother. The emotion of love needs comprehension. It can't only rely on conception. However, just like children, there are some children you look at and you say, this boy is his father's child. You look at another boy and you say, this boy is his mother's child. Although both were involved, obviously, but one reflects the father more than the mother, one reflects the mother more than the father. So this is what Alter Rebbe says. The four aforementioned loves, even though they also come from the mother, but they are their child's, they are their father's children. Or they're from the level of chesed in Bina. Versus this love is from the level of Gvura in Bina, which is the feminine element of Bina itself, and therefore it's a different type of love. This also corresponds, Chassidus explains, with the famous Pasuk Zohav Mitzafin Yasa, gold stems from Tzafin, which is north, because as we know, south, Darim is on the right of east, versus north, which is on the left of east, and thus Tzafin is always connected in Kabbalah with left, with Gvura versus south, which is connected with the right side, and thus gold, which is connected to Tzafin, is also a reflection of Gvura. Okay, now that we know the picture, the cosmic Kabbalistic picture of this love. The Alter Rebbe now begins explaining it with the Tanya contribution to Kabbalah in general, which is making it psychologically applicable to our lives. Because Gvura, Bina, Bina'ila, Gvura'ila, Koyin, Zav, Kesef, it's all, for practical purposes, Mandarin terms, Lahavdil. In other words, extremely abstract and irrelevant. So the Alter Rebbe now explains what he's talking about. The Hainu, this means, now listen carefully to the words. We'll learn a piece here, and then I'll attempt to explain. The Hainu, this means, Shayidei Yisbeinenus Begdullah Saint Saif Baruch Hu. The arousal of this love comes about through meditation on the truth, on the greatness of the Infinite One, the Kula Kamei Kiloi Mamish Chashif, before whom all is considered as absolute nothingness. When the Jew truly reflects on this truth, that in the presence of Hashem Himself, everything else can be deemed as absolute nothingness, this gives rise to the golden love in contrast to the silver love. And as the metaphor that has been given numerous times, that Alter Rebbe himself discusses in Likud Torah and in Tanya also in a different, somewhat different words, similar to our own lives, imagine you evaluate the significance and identity of one thought in the presence of your entire life. One thought of your brain in contrast with your entire life, all of your thoughts, your entire personality, all of your emotions, all of your experience, one thought, Zagdal Terebbe, the whole universe and all of history is the product of one thought of Hashem. One thought. When you think about it, it's a very humbling experience. It's very humbling. Everything that we are totally consumed by is one thought in Hashem's being, so to speak. And thus, in the presence of His own self, that thought is utterly drowned, submerged, pure nothingness in the presence of Hashem's presence, His own presence. So the Alter Rebbe says, when a person really understands this, and it's not easy to understand this, because it's counterintuitive. Not only is it counterintuitive, we'll soon see it could also be counterproductive, as you can well imagine. But it's certainly counterintuitive. What do you mean? It's kula kamei kalei chashiv puts a question mark on everything that we relate to and we identify with. So, but when a Jew really understands this and meditates on this, then tislahit v'tislahiv hanefesh liyikar tiferes gdulasei. Then the soul, listen to his words, the soul becomes inflamed and it flares up towards the precious splendor of his true greatness, uliyistakol abiyikar demalka. It becomes inflamed with this fire because it seeks to gaze upon the glory of the King. That's what it wants. It wants to see the real glory. Kirish be'eish shall have us aza, like a glowing fiery coal, ha'ayla l'mayla, which surges upward. It's like a fiery coal, a mighty flame. Shall have his aza is an awesome, it's a titanic flame that surges upwards. And the flame, the mighty flame, strives to be parted from the wick and the wood on which it is holding, on which it is, it has taken hold, which is containing it. The fire wants to remove itself from it. V'hainu. Now this experience in the soul comes from al yidei tagburis yisoida eish alakisha benefesh alakis, from the prevailing, from the predominance of the element of fire, of divine fire that is in the divine soul. We know already from chapter 1 that everything is composite of four elements. Chapter 1, chapter 3, including the divine soul. It has the element of fire, the element of water, the element of air, and the element of earth. As well as the animal soul has these four elements. Laziness, depression is the element of earth in the animal soul and so forth. He discussed it in the first chapter. So the above mentioned loves till chapter 50 stem from the predominance of the element of water in the divine soul. When that element prevails, it gives rise to these aforementioned loves. When the element of fire prevails, it produces this type of love. Umizeh, and from this experience, from this yearning, baladeit simayim, the soul comes to a thirst. Just as, biologically, when a person is dominated by the element of fire within them, which means when you're dry, when you're hot, unlike when you're cold and you're moisture, when you're dry and you're hot, you're thirsty. And sometimes your thirst becomes very, very powerful. So the same is true spiritually. When the element of fire in the divine soul prevails, it becomes thirsty. As the Pasuk in Tehillim expresses itself in chapter Samach Gimel, David HaMelech says, when he be Mizmela David b'yaisi b'midba Yehuda, when David is in the desert of Yehuda, he says, Tzamalecha nafshi, my soul thirsts to you, and he continues, Kamalecha psari, my flesh pines to you, because be'eretz tzi of ayev bli mayim, I find myself in a parched and barren piece of soil without water. So this produces a thirst in the divine soul. What's the next stage? Again, biologically, if a person is thirsty and he doesn't find any water, he becomes desperate for water, seeking water, and if he doesn't find it, he becomes sick. So the next stage in the soul is l'pchinis chaylus ava. The soul reaches the level of love sickness, which means the soul is sick with love. There is an unquenched thirst that produces a sickness. It's sick of love. It's sick with love. Yearning for something, and it's not being quenched. It's not being satiated. It's not being satisfied. It becomes sick from the love. Then stage three. There's a thirst, there's a love sickness, and stage three is Baal Idei Klois HaNefesh Mamash. At this stage, the soul comes to a virtual expiring of the soul, Klois HaNefesh, where the soul is consumed and it is expired completely and absolutely in Hashem's energy, in Hashem's presence. K'may shekasev, as the Pasuk says again in Tehillim, in chapter Pei Dalet, V'gam Kolsa Nafshi, David HaMelech says, Nichsefa V'gam Kolsa Nafshi, that my soul craves, and it expires, L'chatzreis Beis Hashem, to the courtyard of the house of Hashem. Just to note that this is not just a remote hypothetical possibility. There were Jews who actually experienced it. For example, the Baal Shem Tov had a student whom the Alter Rebbe once visited. Also, that's a separate story. Alter Rebbe, the Maggid, once told Alter Rebbe to go to him for a Shabbos to listen to his Torah. Reb Michal Zlotshever, the holy Reb Michal of Zlotshever, he was a student of the Baal Shem Tov, one of the greatest students of the Baal Shem Tov, and his family knew that during the third meal of Shabbos, that's when the soul of the Jew is capable of experiencing the deepest spiritual ecstasy, because it's the deepest time of Shabbos. It is very, very dangerous to leave Reb Michal Zlotshever alone. Because during the third meal, Reb Michala would experience what Alter Rebbe is describing here. And therefore, from thirst, it would develop into a sickness. And from sickness, it would develop into death, into passing away. The sickness would be so overwhelming, so intolerable, that his soul would expire. And therefore, every single week, there were family members that were there during the third meal of Shabbos, or Hasidim that were there. And the moment they saw that Reb Michala was getting carried away, so to speak, they would awake him. They poured water on him. They shook him. They spoke to him. They took him out of this mode Alter Rebbe is describing. And this is a real story. That one week, one of his sons, he had a son whose name was Rabbi Yosef, was very, very ill. He was actually on his deathbed. He almost passed away. He recovered, but he almost passed away. And during the third meal, the whole family was so overwhelmed, so concerned, so perturbed by his condition that they forgot about Reb Michla, and everybody was in his room. And when they came back, Reb Michla's Lotshava passed away. In the middle of Shalosh Shuddos, he passed away from Klaysa Nafesh. So the Alter Rebbe describes here that this is a different type of love completely. This is a golden love. And he concludes in what's relevant to our discussion now, V'hine mikan yotzo sheirish ha-leviyim lamata. From here is derived the source of the Leviyim below, of the Levites below. Unlike the aforementioned loves, which represent the Kayanim, this love represents the Leviim. And the service and the personality of Leviim here emerged and emits and was emerged from this type of spiritual experience. This is what the Levi represents in contrast to the Kayan. Now you're asking a good question. But the Kayin is superior to the Levi. The Kayin is on a higher level. The Pasuk says, V'yilavu alecha v'yishrasucha, the Levim serve the Kayanim. That's why in the parentheses that follow, the Alter Rebbe will explain that when Mashiach will come, the Levi will be higher than a Kayin. But now the world cannot appreciate the Levi. The Levi must be filtered and funneled through the Kayin. He must be employed by the Kayin. When Mashiach comes and the world will become a receptacle to a truth that it is incapable of experiencing now, the Levi will be superior to a Kayin. But we'll leave that for later. Huh? Moshe was a Levi, as you know. Yeah, Aaron was a Kayin. At the end, officially it was a punishment. Yeah, it's a very interesting, I mean, we're going to leave this for next week because it's a very fascinating phenomenon because it really delves into the secret of what was Korach's rebellion against Aaron and Moshe. We will also come to realize that Korach wasn't just a despicable rabble-rouser from a dungeon, but he actually had a sophisticated appreciation of cosmic Kabbalistic truths. It's just that the time was not ripe for Korach. I think it was the Seer of Lublin who was a Levi, and he used to say the Helik Hazeda, the Korach. Okay, but that we'll leave for later. This doesn't mean that Korach didn't sin. He sinned severely. This doesn't mean. It just means that we have to appreciate his sin. We have to understand where he was coming from. That's what it means. But he sinned. And for Korach to sin, it's much worse than for a regular rabble-rouser or just brute, crude person to sin. What is the Alter Rebbe saying here? The Alter Rebbe says that in the divine soul of the Jew, there is an element of fire. Now this string in the violin of the Jew or in the cello of the divine soul, I think that's how you can understand it. This chord, this element is evoked, it responds when the Jew tunes in to the meditation on the concept of Kula Kamei Kalei Mamash Chashev, that everything is considered as absolute nothingness within Hashem's presence. What does this mean? A person, when reflecting upon godliness, Hashem, spirituality, can, generally speaking, reflect upon two truths that result in two different emotional experiences. One is you think about the fact, you open your soul, you open your heart, you open your brain to the fact that the reality of the world is godliness. We come to realize that the entire world, its entire existence, exists at every moment because of the underlying godly energy and spirituality and life that creates it, that sustains it, that invigorates it, that animates it. We come to appreciate how the world is continuously created, something from nothing. Like the daydreamer who creates images within his daydream. that these images must be created every single moment, and that these images have no reality independent of the daydreamer. And if you would cease to think of them even for one moment, they would naturally cease to exist. Why? Because the only definition of their existence is what? That he's dreaming them up. And such types of meditations and reflections that we discussed often in earlier chapters of Tanya, the Jew comes to realize that the reality of reality is godliness. The reality of my life, of my breath, of my brain, of my impulses, of my personality, of my identity is godliness. The reality of you is godliness. The reality of my bank account, my car, my washing machine, my bedroom, my body and my spirit, my life and everything in the world is really godliness. When a Jew really connects to this, it's not difficult to connect it. It's not easy to connect to this because even this is counterintuitive. This is what davening is really all about, at least part of davening. To inculcate within the Jew how you look at the weather, you see rain, you see snow, you see a vapor, you see an animal, you see an ant. Whatever you see, it should allow you to appreciate the reality of it, which is godliness. The Jew searches to experience the truth. And when he finds the truth, which means when he feels that he connected to that truth, and he could connect to that truth because it is at the core of himself and at the core of everything. When he finds the object of his love, this becomes his love. I want this. I want this truth. When he finds the object of his love, the object of his affection, he celebrates. He's ecstatic. He's happy. He's serene. He's just at peace. He's at peace. He found the love of his life. He found that which he really loves. But this love doesn't generate within the human being a desire to transcend the world, to leave the world, to become frustrated with the universe. On the contrary, this intensifies his relationship to the world because he thinks to himself, Hashem sustains the world. If the world is good enough for Hashem, if the world is a good enough stack in which Hashem invests his prowess, it's a good enough stack for me to embrace. When I relate only to the fact that the reality of the world is godliness, if it's good enough for Hashem, who decides to sustain it at every moment, it's good enough for me. This love allows me to despise the shell, allows me to despise the evil, it allows me to despise the falsehood, that vulgarity, that materialism, that egotism is what life is all about. But when I discover the truth of the world, I'm in love with that, I embrace that. This in Hasidic terminology is defined as reflecting on what we call memale kol alamin, which means on the fact that Hashem fills all of the worlds. And fills literally means feels, that there's no nuance, there is no crevice that is not filled with Him. Because if there would be, it wouldn't be memale kol alamin. But D'Alter Rebbe is now discussing another type of meditation. And that's the meditation of kula kamei keloi chashev. When we say that Hashem fills the worlds, godliness vibrates through every blade of grass, through every snowflake, through every grazing animal, through every human spirit. That's true. But which element of godliness, so to speak, vibrates through the cosmos, can be experienced within the world? As I said before, it's one thought of Hashem. One thought of Hashem, the Alter Rebbe writes in Likud HaTorah very often, and he writes in Tanya chapter 20 that it's not even one thought, it's one word. But for the sake of our discussion, it'll be easier to visualize. Huh? It's not even a word, it's a letter. But think about the one thought in your life, a thought that you have. One thought. That thought is utterly nothingness in comparison and in the presence of the entire personality of a person. So when you take the whole energy, so to speak, that is expressed within the universe, in the presence of Hashem Himself, it's absolutely submerged, drowned, irrelevant, insignificant, valueless. It doesn't have an identity, it doesn't have a name in the presence of Hashem. When a Jew relates to this, his heart begins to ask the question, what am I doing here? Why am I here? To put it in terms of the Alter Rebbe elsewhere in Torah and Likud HaTorah many times, the Gemara says in Brachas, L'cha Hashem HaGdula, when we say, To you, Hashem, belongs the attribute of greatness. Zog de Gemara, what does it mean that you're great? Zu maisa bereishis. Creation of the world, after all, study the world. Forget about the world, study your own body. The symmetry of your own body. The various systems that compound together just to allow us to breathe and to live for one moment is nothing less than miraculous. After thousands of years, we still haven't scratched the surface of the depth that exists within the universe, so it reflects Hashem's greatness who created it. The Gemara says at the end of Megillah, in the place where you find Hashem's greatness, that's where you find His humility. So literally, people explain the Gemara that many great people are also very arrogant. But Hashem, wherever you discuss His greatness, you also see that He's humble. So the pasuk says, "Marim v'kadosh ashkayin es dako shval ruach." I'm holy and exalted, but I dwell in the devastated and broken spirit. The Alter Rebbe explains us a much deeper interpretation. But makim shatamaytzig delase shamatamaytzian v'snusay. When we discuss the greatness of Hashem, we have to remember that what we call greatness is for Hashem humiliating and devastating and embarrassing. It's not a good example, but it's somewhat of an example. Imagine that on the tombstone of Professor Albert Einstein, or during the eulogy at his funeral, the man will get up and say, "Albert Einstein, an extraordinary individual. He was so skilled in fixing doorknobs." It's actually insulting. So may you'll ask, why is it insulting? A dog can't fix a doorknob. A frog can't fix a doorknob. Even a horse can't fix a doorknob. It demonstrates the skill of a human being. That's true. But this is what expresses this human being. True, his soul had the ability also to fix doorknobs or to put in light bulbs. But what did he invest in this act from his personality? What was revealed from his personality in it? Nothing. Einstein said he would have been better off being a plumber rather than a scientist. You mean he would have been closer to truth? Now, the same is true. The same is true. Imagine somebody writes a biography about your life and describes your greatness, that you knew you were very skilled in tying your shoelaces. You'll say, that's actually humiliating. Why is it humiliating? An animal can do it. But the answer is, because relative to who you are and relative to your personality, the energy and the skill that's invested in tying a shoelace totally doesn't express who you are. And Chassidus says the same thing is about the creation of the world. You look at the world, you study it for millions of years, it expresses nothing of who Hashem is. That's not Him. It's one thought that totally does not express even a minute, even one iota of who we're dealing with. Thus, in the previous meditations and all of the previous chapters in Tanya, the nature of the meditation that evokes these chords in the Jewish soul's cello is the Jew feels his closeness to Hashem. Hashem, you are my life. Hashem, you are my father. Hashem, you'll forgo everything for me. So what does it produce? It produces a sense of closeness. When the Jew reflects that Hashem's true self, which is reality, Hashem's true self is reality, is totally, totally not expressed within his entire experience, the human's entire experience, and within the experience of the world, he feels rejected. He feels remote. He feels minuscule. And therefore the emotion that is produced is a love that frustrates his condition. And that's why this love is called fire versus the former loves that are called water. What's the difference? Why does he call it a fiery love? So very briefly, because of all of the differences of fire and water, basically five differences, very short, very briefly. Water connects things to each other. When you want to seal the envelope, you lick it. Water could connect things to each other. Fire crumbles things. If you have a table and you want to make sure that the table should end up into 60 pieces, the table should be splintered, just put it into a bonfire.